This is Sunday Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Haim Goodman Strauss.
Good morning.
Is with me again this morning in the studio. Haim is a math professor at the University of Arkansas. You live close to downtown Fayetteville. Did you hear the motorcycles
this
weekend? That's
right. We sure had a lot of Hogs fans around this week.
As in Harleys.
That's right.
Speed was at the crux of last week's math puzzle.
That's right. So we had someone driving down to Fort Smith down Highway 71B at a whopping 30 miles an hour.
Heads to Fort Smith in a jalopy.
Say 60 miles away.
Okay.
And gets a better car, shoots up 540, and wants to average a total of 60 miles per hour.
For the entire round trip.
For the entire round trip. And the question was, how fast should that driver go in order to average 60 miles per hour?
My guess was 90.
Because, of course, the average of 30 and 90 is 60. But as a couple of listeners wrote in, you can't go fast enough.
At all, ever.
In fact, as Andy Fox points out, you could drive 3,600 miles per hour, and you would still only average 59.5 miles per hour on the whole trip. The reason is that the trip down took a total of 2 hours. You were going 30 miles per hour for 60 miles.
That's a two-hour trip.
Two-hour trip. If you wanted to go 120 miles, the round trip, at 60 miles per hour, that would take 2 hours.
So you've already blown it by taking the full 2 hours to get there.
Completely blown it. Not a chance.
So our person was risking a speeding ticket for no reason.
That's right. Hats off to Andy and our other listeners who got it, and we'll be sending you some Ptolemy brand math cards.
And some bamboo math
and
stickers.
Bamboo brand math stickers. So this week, let's try making radio history.
All right.
Do something that probably...
I'm a little scared, but let's try.
I don't know if this has been attempted on the air ever before, but of course, you know, we've had, what, a century of radio?
Yeah.
And so we've been talking about how to compare the sizes of infinite sets, and we do that the same way we compare the sizes of finite sets. If we have a pile of candy and a pile of pennies, if we can match each penny with each piece of candy, we know that we have as many of each.
It's a match set.
And in the same way, if we can match up the things in one set, an infinite set, with the things in another infinite set, we know that that there are this many things in each. So the big amazing thing is that there. First big amazing thing is that there are actually as many rational numbers as there are counting numbers.
And again, for definition's sake, counting numbers are the ones we're most familiar with,
like
1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
Rational numbers, any number that can be wholly presented as a fraction.
That's right. And it's amazing because, remember,
wait, there are as many as of each.
There's as many of each. And the really, really brain-boggling thing is, remember how we were talking about rational numbers as marks on a ruler, finer and finer. Yeah. Everywhere you look on the ruler, you know, you would have infinitely many little tiny tick marks, you know, 7, 38ths, 192.
Yeah, so imagine that ruler and you've got 1/2 and 1/8, and in between those two numbers are an infinite amount.
Yeah, right. Anywhere you look. But somehow there's exactly as many tick marks as there are counting numbers. This was a big discovery by Georg Cantor about 125 years ago, and this is how he did it.
Okay.
So all we have to do is be able to make a list of all the possible rational numbers. If we can list every single one out, then the first one on the list will match with the counting number 1. Second one on the list will match with 2.
So 1 over 1 could match with 1.
That's a great place
to start.
1 over
half could match with 2.
Sure. Now the question is, how do we systematically wander through the rational numbers? And it's actually what we do is we start out with 1 over 1. The top and the bottom add up to 2, so we'll list all the ones where the top and the bottom add up to 2.
And well, that would only be 1 right. over 1.
Now we'll list all the ones where the top and the bottom add up to 3.
1 over 2 and 2 over 1.
Then we're done with those. Now we list all the ones where the top and bottom add up to 4. Which
1
is
over 3, 2 over 2.
And 1 over 3, except now 2 over 2 has already appeared on the list, because that's really the same as 1.
1 over 1, right.
So we just skip those, you know, when we come
that's
across.
That's not a new number.
Right. And now we list all the ones where top and bottom add up to 5, 6, so on. And somewhere, say, you know, like we pick a number 19/37. Well, that's going to be on the list somewhere because the top and the bottom add up to something or another. And sooner or later, we'll get around to listing it.
Yeah, all the ones that are 56.
Right. So every single rational number will appear exactly one place on the list. We've lined up the rational numbers and the counting numbers, and they have the same size. So you might think that there are as many, that all infinite sets have the same size.
Well, infinity is infinity, after all.
That's right. It sort of seems like it. And we've seen another example of how, you know, it's very surprising, you know, this thing is the same size as that. But not every infinite set is actually got the same size. The real numbers, the set of all possible decimals.
Which means even those that it includes whole counting numbers, it includes rational numbers, but it also includes numbers that can't be expressed
as a fraction. Irrational numbers, right.
Pi is one.
Pi is a perfect example. And there's somehow far more, vastly, vastly more of those than there are counting numbers or rational numbers.
So you're telling me there are, wait, there's an in. There's a larger infinity than other infinities?
Yeah, the really staggering thing is that there's bigger infinities than that and bigger infinities than that, on and on and on. It's really pretty mind-blowing.
How does this help in mathematics, knowing this?
Well, and
I know that's a curve, but I think if
that
if
is a curveball.
Okay.
But that's okay. So, well, it turned out to be fundamentally important. I mean, in modern mathematics, it just gave people more robust control over the kinds of things that we're concerned with. I don't know. It's kind of hard to be
okay.
less than vague about that.
I'm going to take your word for that. But what I'm asking is, this was a monumental discovery in mathematics.
It was absolutely a monumental discovery that was critically important to modern mathematics.
Quickly, a quiz to think on. One that Cantor could probably figure out in his sleep, but for
well,
the rest
we'll
of
see.
Us may present.
Well, now this one will sound tough, but it actually has a very simple, sneaky answer.
You've said that before.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess I have said that on a number of occasions. So a train is heading into
Winslow,
then, at 30 miles per hour, maybe one of those Missouri Pacific passenger trains. And how far is that away?
From here?
Say, 10 miles, maybe?
Oh, yeah, I'd say maybe 15.
Okay, so a train is going at 30 miles per hour into Winslow. Meanwhile, an eagle sets out, flies to Winslow from the train, back to the train, back to Winslow, back to the train, back to, as the train is heading into Winslow the whole time. So the eagle first flies 15 miles, then back to the train, which is now somewhat less, and then back to Winslow and somewhat mm-hmm. less, and so on. And the question is, by the time the train reaches Winslow, 15 miles down the line, how far will the eagle have flown?
But we haven't.
Oh, I missed one piece of information, right?
Right.
The eagle is flying at, say, 60 miles per hour.
Okay, so you've got the train heading into Winslow mm-hmm. at 30 miles an hour. It's got to go 15 miles.
Right.
The eagle is flying 60 miles an hour.
Back and forth and back and forth.
From the train to Winslow to back to the train, back
right.
to Winslow. And the question then being?
How far did the eagle fly when the train reaches Winslow?
Okay.
Great.
Thanks, Haim.
Well, thanks a lot.